I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources, Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Jordan, do you move the minutes with a little correction?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion to approve the minutes from March 22nd with the edit that actually I called the meeting to order with the gavel less on March 22nd. And so with that correction, I would move their approval.
Representative Jordan moves the minutes for March 22nd with a correction as to who actually called the meeting to order. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Minutes are adopted. Minutes as amended are adopted. So, members, and we have a lot of testifiers today on a lot of bills. So just for the guidance on this, we're going to do 2 minutes per testifier. When we get to 2 minutes, Mr. Strohmeyer is going to let me know, and I will lightly tap the gavel that the 2 minutes are up. So the first bill up is House File 3705, Representative Fisher, installation of permeable synthetic turf. Representative Fisher, would you like to move that House File 3705 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Yes, I do, Chair Hansen.
Representative Fisher, to the bill.
Thank you very much. This is 3705 is a bill that would add synthetic turf as one of the things that's an acceptable practice in controlling stormwater runoff. This is an item that if the synthetic turf meets certain conditions, it would be acceptable as one of the options that could be out there. This is something that came before me for a variety of reasons. First of all, in terms of stormwater management, one of the things that we know is that we're having instances where we're, in some areas of the state, having more drier periods that last longer. And so as a result, what is happening is we've got instances where active areas on the yard with kids are getting run down, and people are looking for alternatives to put in so that they can make sure that they don't have just dirt out there. Some of the things that are attractive about this, there are people who are also installing this so that they don't have to worry about watering, don't have to worry about fertilizer, don't have to worry about irrigation. They're looking at different ways to do their landscaping out there. There are people who like to have what looks like a green lawn without the upkeep, which is also good because if we're losing less water, if we're using less chemicals, we're being more environmentally conscious. The items that are being used as outlined here for the most part are recyclable and would be reused at the end of that point of time. I will pause there knowing that we've got tight time frame for questions, and I know that there are some people who had some concerns I've already been meeting with.
So first up, Troy Johnson, Forever Lawn, Minnesota. And on deck is Linda Warner, community member and St. Paul resident. Welcome, Mr. Johnson, if you could state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Johnson. I'm the vice president of Forever Lawn, Minnesota. I'm here as a representative of small business and the synthetic turf industry in our state, as well as a member of the Minnesota Nursery Landscape Association. When I started this business 20 years ago, people would tell me, oh, this is what they are doing in the Southwest because they have no water and they can't grow grass. As I looked around, I saw the need for this type of surfacing in Minnesota as well. Soon after, synthetic grass technology had taken off, making it more environmentally friendly and aesthetically pleasing. Minnesotans over the last 20 years have also come to realize that there is a place for synthetic grass in the Midwest. One misconception I would like the opportunity to clarify today is that the synthetic grass industry is not trying to replace grass. The purpose of synthetic grass is to solve problems. Problem areas with water conservation, problem areas with high traffic due to dogs, kids, sports, problem areas to grow grass such as above parking ramps and rooftops. However, with the drought, we have seen tremendous increase from homeowners that are seeking to solve problems on their properties, such as muddy backyards from dogs, safety surfacing under play equipment, hard to grow areas under shade trees, and hard to mow areas such as around pools. With an increase in Minnesotans asking for this type of lawn, we in the industry have been running into localities not knowing how to regulate synthetic grass for residents. Some say it's impermeable, even when we supply permeability testing. We have had some cities ask that this bill get passed to make it easier for them to regulate synthetic grass and allow homeowners to make the decision on what type of surfacing best suits their needs. After multiple attempts, frustration, and money, where natural grass still does not solve their problems. I ask for your support on House File 3705 and help homeowners have more options. Thank you. I'm available for any questions.
Thank you. So Ms. Warner is stuck in traffic, so we're going to go to Becky Wardell Gartner, Coalition for Plastic Reduction, and a Minnesota Master Water Steward. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you. Chair Hansen, Vice Chair Jordan, and committee members, thank you for listening to my testimony. I'm Rebecca Wardell Gartner, a member of the Coalition for Plastic Reduction. I am also, there is a testimony from my coalition in your packet. I am also a trained Minnesota water steward. And some of the things we do as water stewards are we plant rain gardens, we plant native plants, we work on salt. We try to, on days like this, we try to get people to reduce the amount of salt that they use. We're really concerned about the water quality of Minnesota, and we try to work to improve it. Real solutions to water management slow the water down and create habitat for bees, butterflies, and birds. Native grasses and sedges do that. Synthetic turf does not. Synthetic turf is also made of plastic. Plastic contains many toxic chemicals, chemicals that will leach into our waterways. Plastic also breaks down into microplastics that will shed into our lakes and rivers. I know in this room everybody cares deeply about our water quality. Synthetic turf legislation is not a sustainable solution to protect Minnesota's waterways or to protect the health of Minnesotans. This legislation is a false solution. I want you to visualize a time in the future where our roadsides are covered with plastic, synthetic turf, and your neighbors have plastic lawns. Is that the kind of future we want? The plastic industry has done a stellar job covering our earth with plastic. Do we want that to continue? I'm asking you to please vote against House File 3705. Thank you.
Brandon Smith, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Alexa Stoneth, Legislative Coordinator at MPCA, and I do have Mr. Smith with me today as well. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we would like to thank the author for the opportunity to have a brief conversation about his bill and for his willingness to work with us today. The MPCA manages the Minnesota Stormwater Manual, an online tool where stormwater managers can go to learn about regulations and explore best management practices. This is a tool designed to be updated frequently as new research and technical information becomes available. In fact, we have structured the tool in a wiki format so that it can be easily and nimbly updated. This bill would require the MPCA to include permeable synthetic turf in the stormwater manual as a viable stormwater management practice. The criteria that would apply to synthetic turf practice would be established in statute rather than in the stormwater manual, which is the usual procedure, and we do have some concern about that. In general, the Minnesota Stormwater Manual functions best when the technical details of new practice or material can be verified through peer review and updated promptly based on the newest available research and technical information. In addition, we have the concern that this bill may cause confusion with respect to other best practices for stormwater. Currently, both the construction stormwater permit and municipal stormwater permit contain a maximum authorized stormwater infiltration rate of 8.3 inches per hour. This bill would change the statute to allow an infiltration rate of 25 inches per hour, so many times the current required infiltration rate. This higher infiltration rate is consistent with permit requirements, is inconsistent with permit requirements. It would allow a considerably faster infiltration rate than is allowed now, and we have concerns that it would not be as protective as groundwater as the current requirement. There's also the potential that this discrepancy could cause confusion with permittees. We really appreciate the work that the author has done so far to advance this concept, and we are happy to work with the author on the language of the bill as it moves forward. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we're happy to stand for questions.
Linda Warner. Linda Warner. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Members, questions? Representative Fisher.
I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to present the bill. I have mentioned that I will continue working with folks. I know that some of the folks I've talked to around the table have some thoughts, and I'll be incorporating those in as we go forward. Thank you.
Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 3705 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Representative Liz Lagarde, House File 4181. Would you like to move that House File 4181 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
I believe have you have an A1 amendment.
Correct. I'd like to move that to get the bill in the proper shape.
Representative Liz Lagarde moves the A1 author's amendment. Could you describe what it is?
It reduces it from 500,000 to 200,000 after the forecast. We want to keep money in the reserves.
Is there any discussion on the A1 author's amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The A1 amendment as adopted. Representative Liz Lagarde, to the bill as amended.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to have this hearing and committee members. Mr. Chair, members, each year, funds generated by the tax on gasoline used to operate boats, snowmobiles, ATVs, and off-road vehicles are transferred to the watercraft, snowmobile, ATV, off-highway, motorcycle, and off-road vehicle accounts. The bill in front of you today appropriates money from the ATV dedicated account that will be used to help catch up to maintain trails across the state of Minnesota. Some of the funding is also used for new trails projects, including construction and maintenance of one of our primary trails in northeast Minnesota, the Prospector Loop ATV Trail. This funding is critical to develop and maintaining sustainable trail system, which is extremely important to my district and areas all over the state of Minnesota. Before I turn it over to the testifiers, I just want to say that this is a very, very fast-growing industry in northeast Minnesota and across the state of Minnesota. And I want to just call out the volunteers. The money that we're allocating here just helps them go through the process, but the amount of man hours put forth in a volunteer way to create a system for the whole state and people from all over to come and utilize, it cannot be underscored. These individuals ain't making money. They're giving of themselves to create an opportunity for others. So I just would ask you to think about, as Northeast Minnesota continues to try to diversify, become more well-rounded, these trail systems help stimulate our economy. It brings people to our area that are spending money. Right, and before they offer, because somebody's probably going to offer, I would like for all of us to come up to Northeast Minnesota on these trails. We're going to have a ride. I'll let Roger Scraba invite some people because I know he's pretty excited about it because he's going to cook walleye for everybody. He just doesn't know it yet. But no, seriously, we want everyone to come and experience greater Minnesota and these trails. So with that, I turn it over to my testifiers. But thank you again, Mr. Chair, for having this hearing.
First up, Ron Potter, ATV Association of Minnesota. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Ron Potter. I'm the president of ATV Minnesota. As the author has indicated, we're asking for a one-time appropriation of $1.5 million, 200 increase to the base going forward. This funding is necessary to help us catch up with the maintenance on our trails following the COVID issue. The first year of COVID, you know, greatly reduced our maintenance that we were allowed to do in the field and significantly increased the use going on our trails. The second year, the process just continued. There was a process which allowed our folks to go out, but because we need to work in pairs for safety, we were very limited on the amount of maintenance we could do in that, even that second year. And again, the activity increased even more. So as a result, many of our trail segments have fallen behind in maintenance. This one-time funding will allow us to address some of the backlog in maintenance, and this is being used across the state. Northeast, Northwest, Southeast, Southwest, all of our trails are going to benefit from this funding. Some of the funding will also go to new projects. Clubs are trying to do the right thing. Many of the projects involve state forest roads or trails that are already open for ATV use, but they're not involved, they're not in the grant and aid program. So they're not getting annual fund for maintenance, and they're also not getting monitored for ATV use. The grant and aid maintenance cost comes from the ATV dedicated account and has no impact on the general fund. Monitoring occurs on designated trails by clubs as well as through the Trail Ambassador Program. The Trail Ambassador Program is for ATV riders trained by the DNR Division of Enforcement. They're trained in education, environment, safety, and monitoring program, and they do not do any enforcement. They talk to riders, they provide information on rules, regulations, trail etiquette, provide maps, show where they can legally ride, speak to safety issues, and they monitor trail conditions and locate and identify any invasive species along the trail. This is the only, we're the only trail group that's trained by the DNR to monitor these trails for safety and for invasive species. We also have a $500,000 grant program to the county sheriffs that's used for education and enforcement. I thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to speak to this bill today, and I stand for questions.
Thank you. Chris Rocky, Twig Area Trail Riders ATV Club. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Chris Rocky. I'm here speaking in support of House File 4181 on behalf of the Twig Area Trail Riders ATV Club. To begin, it's important to understand why this appropriation bill is important to the area that our club represents, which includes Cloquet, Saginaw, Brookston, and Independence. ATV and side-by-side use is widespread and part of normal and everyday work, normal life where we work, live, and play. When I arrive at work in Cloquet each morning, it's normal to see ATVs and side-by-sides in the parking lot, common to see them operating on city streets, which is allowable under city ordinance, going to the post office, the bank, or a neighbor's house. Our rural county roads are widely used all-terrain vehicle routes, and regular year-round use as weather permits is reality where we call home. Although use is widespread, our area lacks a connected and officially designated ATV trail system, despite having significant existing legal use opportunity. This regular and widespread existing use, present as a multitude of forest roads, routes, and ad hoc trails, dates back decades and is popular with local residents and have long been used for forest access, hunting, and recreational riding. But because it's not a designated trail system, it's not formally maintained or mapped for public use. To meet the goal of having an official and sustainable trail system, a standardized and significant environmental review process is the protocol on which the permits are then based. This opportunity presents itself through the grant and aid program, where dedicated ATV registration funds are appropriated through bills such as 4181 to local clubs through the DNR to fund the extensive and exhaustive environmental review procedures already in place by statute. These reviews ensure that all agencies and agency divisions review the impact of designated existing use routes into official trails. Once the permitting is approved, the trails will then be maintained under the same GAA programs under local DNR oversight. Again, all this occurs using the dedicated funds provided by ATV registration funding. We as ATV users are essentially self-funding ourselves using our own dedicated monies, but we need your support to appropriate these funds from the ATV dedicated account. This year's appropriation bill funds a variety of trail maintenance, environmental review, engineering study, grant fund matching programs, and is crucial to continuing to give Minnesota ATV riders continued safe and legal use. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak. In support of House File 4181, I would stand for questions at this time.
Thank you. Nick Wagnum, Prospector ATV Club. Welcome. State your name for the record.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Wagnum. I'm here today as the president of the Prospector ATV Club Alliance. For the past 10 years, we've been planning and working with local, county, and state agencies to build a sustainable trail system that connects the communities of Ely, Babbitt, Tower, and Barris, and along with a connection to the North Shore through Finland. Finland, the city, not the country. Okay. Our projects have been environmentally reviewed along the way, including completing environmental assessment worksheets. We have also just received a National Recreational Trail Project Award for our Beaver River Bridge project, which is funded in part by federal, state, and regional funding sources. Today we are here for the trail connection between the City of Tower and the Voyager Country and Quad Cities ATV trail systems. Our project would utilize existing portions of the Taconite State Trail and provide a connection to the Boys Fort Reservation on Lake Vermilion. Trail construction includes connecting the band-owned Y Store and by County Road a connection to the band's Fortune Bay Resort and Casino. This will also connect to numerous resorts and businesses along Lake Vermilion. I want to add that the University of Minnesota Extension has been working on an economic impact study for Northeastern Minnesota ATV trails. So they conducted a survey. They generated over 1,000 responses from 63 different Minnesota counties and 14 states. While the study is still being completed, the university released some numbers, including the average spending per person per day for ATV riders. They found through the study the average resident spends $38 a day, while the average visitor spends $144 per day on food, lodging, transportation, and shopping. Our project, as I mentioned, has already gone through the environmental review process and now seeks the funding for construction. The Prospector Alliance approached ATV Minnesota at its 2024 Legislative Summit to request support for funds from the dedicated account. ATV Minnesota has approved this project, receiving the funds, and we would look to the Iron Range Resources Board for the matching funds. Our request is that you approve Representative Liz Legarde's bill so we continue to provide recreational and economic opportunities on the Iron Range. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Sure. Go.
As you can tell, he's for it.
Welcome and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Dave Clevenger. I live in Lakeville. I am the vice president of ATV Minnesota and the president of South Metro ATV Club. I'm here today representing South Metro ATV Club in support of House File 4181. The majority of our 70 family memberships live in Scott and Dakota counties. The 7 metro area has over 70,000 ATVs registered. That is 1 in 5 of the 350,000 ATVs registered in the state of Minnesota. As you can imagine, there are no riding opportunities in the metro area. In fact, there are very few riding opportunities in the southern half of the state. So when our club goes for ATV rides, we head north. We head north not only to ride, but we also head north to help maintain the trail system. House File 4181 seeks to move funds from the ATV dedicated account to the ATV grant and aid program for the development and maintenance of the Minnesota ATV trail system. The ATV dedicated account is user funded, as you've heard today. This is through ATV registrations and a percentage of the non-highway gas tax. These funds, along with the volunteers from the 70 ATV clubs throughout the state of Minnesota, are responsible for the development and maintenance of the Minnesota ATV trail system in partnership with the DNR and local land managers. South Metro ATV Club maintains Class 1 ATV trails in Nemadji State Forest, which is over 2 hours north of the South Metro. When the heavy snow fell in December of 2022, it caused a lot of damage to the trails in central Minnesota, especially Pine and Carlton counties. Our club volunteered to clear trees in the Fond du Lac State Forest, which is Carlton County, in the General C.C. Andrews State Forest, which is Pine County, and in the Nemadji State Forest, which is also in Pine County. In 2023, our club volunteered over 570 labor hours to maintain Minnesota ATV trails. We also put thousands of miles on our vehicles to get to and from the trail system and spent money bringing in heavy equipment. The grant and aid program is a cost share program that's critical to provide the funding necessary. Thank you, Chairman and committee members. I look forward to your support of House File 4181.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else? Questions from members? Oh, we do have one. Okay, come on up. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee, for letting us take the time to provide some testimony. I'm Corey Cease. I'm land commissioner for Itasca County, and I'm representing a position that our county board took against this last year in 23, and speaking from the Itasca County experience. Am I speaking along, wrong, Bill? Okay.
Yeah, this is the funding bill. This is Representative Lizegard's bill.
It's okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a different bill.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm hard of hearing. I can't hear anything that's going on. So, I was speaking on 2791.
Yeah, so if you could wait until the next
okay.
bill.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't want you speaking against my bill.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 4181? Okay. Members, any questions? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And more so a question for the audience. Are there any trail ambassadors here today? I see a number of you. And I just want to quickly thank you for the work that you're doing around the state. When I was a youngster and out running around trying to enjoy motorized recreation, it wasn't what it is today, obviously. A lot of work has been done, and I appreciate Representative Lizegard's bill being heard today in committee, Mr. Chair. Around my district is Miller Black Bear, Mississippi Northwoods, Spider Lake, all trail systems that are critical to the service-based economy around the Brainerd Lakes area, and what a tremendous resource that is, an opportunity for old and young alike. Doesn't matter what anybody's situation is, almost everybody can get out and enjoy the public lands we have in Minnesota on an ATV, no matter what their physical limitations may or may not be. What a tremendous thing for families as well to all be able to participate together. As a family of eight, it takes more than one machine to get the Heismans from point A to point B. But thanks to you all that are out there volunteering and doing this work, it's something that we can enjoy together, and many, many hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans enjoy with my family. So just a hat tip to everybody here today and to the motorized sports that we have here in Minnesota, and again, a voice of support for this bill. I hope it is included ultimately when we come to the end of session.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just a comment, most of this is in my district. Thank you, Representative Lizegard, for carrying the bill. I think it's important to note that I come from this district that has a lot of motorized sports. We also have a lot of non-motorized sports. And from being someone from that area, I support both. Our last meeting, we were talking about, or a meeting, about how I was at Thompson Park using those trails in West St. Paul. I think wherever we can put a trail, however we can put a trail, it benefits everyone, not just a user group. This user group happens to be for the funding right now that they pay into the fund. They're just asking to get the money back to be used on the trail. So thank you.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Yeah, so I just noticed that the bill speaks time and time again specifically to ATVs. So in Winona County, we have separate ordinances for ATVs and UTVs. So is this excluding UTVs, or, I mean, and I see everyone's wearing ATV shirts, and I would hate to see UTVs miss out on all this.
Representative Lizegard.
Mr. Chair, no.
Doesn't exclude.
But includes them. Gotcha.
Members, any other questions? Representative Lizegard, close.
Closing?
Well, first I want to thank everybody that came from far and near to testify and be a part of this, as you can see behind me. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us to have our voice, and I truly hope that this is included in the final bill. So thank you.
Representative Lislegard renews his motion that House File 4181, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 2791, Representative Purcell. Land, water quality, aquatic life, and wildlife protected. Representative Purcell, would you like to move that House File 2791 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Purcell, I believe you have a DE4 author's amendment. Would you like to move your amendment and explain it briefly?
Yes, that is my motion, Mr. Chair. The DE4 clarifies the original intent of the bill and is a good faith attempt by the proponents to make some updates after getting feedback speaking with stakeholders.
Representative Purcell moves the DE4 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The DE4 amendment is adopted. Representative Purcell, to the bill as amended.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I present House File 2791 before the committee, and I'm proud to be a voice for many grassroots groups who support the legislation before you in order for Minnesota to be more intentional around our off-road vehicle spaces in our state. You'll see from the there's about a 40-page handout. There's a section in there with some colored images that is helpful from my partners in this work. Changes are happening in our environment, both human-caused and climate-induced, which are greatly impacting our outdoor culture and resources. According to the DNR, from its website, many of our lakes and streams are designated as impaired bodies of water, as on page 4 of this handout. The impaired waters are the lower picture. These might be due to sedimentation and siltation, and a number of species are endangered due to habitat loss and degradation. Habitat degradation is a predominant factor in 70% of our species in greatest conservation need. We must do our part to find a better balance between how we recreate outdoors and protecting our priceless water, wildlife, and habitat. In that spirit, House File 2791 is a proposal to build better trail management practices going forward as a way to better protect our lakes, streams, wildlife, and habitat on public lands, and also better coordinates our extensive ongoing trail building across the state. The sport of motorized recreation has had a 143% increase in users since 2005, and the machines have evolved from 400 pounds to 2,000 pounds, with a significant increase in horsepower and trail impact potential, which is why we feel it's past due to have this conversation at the legislature. As amended, this bill does four things. One, make state law consistent and fair throughout the state with access to designated and posted trail signs. This not only helps users know where to ride, but it reduces illegal trails from being made. Two, buffer zones, which codify DNR and U.S. Forest Service guidelines for water protection, and avoiding the MPCA's currently listed 49 water bodies that are ranked exceptional use. These are the waters in that top part of the map. You can see they are mostly located in the northeast corner of Minnesota, where I, too, have lived and regularly recreate. Around in this Arrowhead area, these are our only remaining pristine streams, reaches, and lakes in the state. The third thing that this particular legislation does is implement the 2003 legislative audit recommendation requiring environmental assessment worksheets for future trail development for all off-highway vehicle projects. We just heard in the previous bill, projects have gone through this EAW process. Making sure that projects go through that process fosters public transparency, reduces lawsuits and possible federal interference. And fourth and finally, tribal and local improvement early in the planning process of all off-highway vehicles projects. This levels the playing field for our local units of government and promotes resolution among local entities. And just to note, our intention when we created this bill is that the funding would come from the DNR's ATV account. The DNR's 2022 ATV Master Plan Survey expressed the need for additional improvements, which this bill addresses.
The DNR itself said improvements of marked routes greatly reduces off-trail riding, prioritizes trail maintenance needs to include invasive species removal and mitigation, and examines hydrological impact. Dealerships said trails need more signage and or enforcement. Northern Minnesota has a decent presence of enforcement, but this could be improved and implemented statewide. Trail administrators said clubs circumnavigating the state process to do trail systems on their own without appropriate coordination with surrounding agencies. Excuse me. And cities and townships representatives said users do not know where they are allowed to ride north of Highway 2 where there is not required signage. Based on these conversations, House File 2791 helps to make sure trails are in the right places and supports the DNR and conservation officers in carrying out their duty to all of our public land users by codifying basic measures that help protect our waters and habitats as we see a continued expansion of motorized trails statewide. Having these four measures in statute will help to protect public lands for all recreators. We know these measures can help prevent further degradation of our forests, habitats, and waters, wild and aquatic life, so that our exceptional outdoors can be available for generations to come. Now, to give more definition to this ongoing need, I have several testifiers with me today who can give voice to the challenges and successes we hope to see in this program.
First testifier, Susan Schubert, Minnesota Public Lands Coalition.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, representatives. My name is Susan Schubert, and I'm with Minnesota Public Lands Coalition. We are a grassroots group focused on habitat and water protection, supporting common sense measures as we continue the extensive multi-million dollar build-out of motorized sport trails throughout the state. There are currently many thousands of miles accessible to off-highway vehicles, with 700 plus more club miles in progress. There are also three separate DNR statewide master plan systems for ATVs, off-road vehicles, and off-highway motorcycles in progress. We spoke with a number of stakeholders, including ATV Minnesota and DNR, and even though we are not in agreement, we altered some bill text in a good faith effort to reach consensus. Except for the measure of trail access to designated and posted trails, bill measures apply to future designated routes on unpaved trails only. No national forest roads or other motor vehicle roads are in the bill. No hunter exemptions are affected in any way. Although DNR and others say there is a manual with measures and also guiding principles in place, however well-intentioned, these are voluntary, not enforceable, and arbitrarily followed. The manual itself states that width or clearance zone of a trail should not be modified to reduce its ecological impact if doing so would appreciably diminish its value to users. Grant and aid club projects need no public meetings or hearings. Two quick examples of stated manual guidelines that are best protection strategy but often not followed are 100 minimum to 200 foot preferred buffer zones for water. The Trism Trail photo in your packet now in progress is being bulldozed right next to water. Wetlands and sensitive areas are to be avoided, yet a project up north was recently green-lighted that will put down boardwalk on almost 7/8 of a mile of wetlands and fill in 6 acres of wetlands. Finally, the bill has a wide breadth of coalition support, and that is further evidence that current suggested guidelines and measures are not working for public land stakeholders. Just to name a few of the bill supporters, they are the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Natural Resources Division, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers for the trail access measure, the Cook County Coalition of Lake Associations representing 18 lakes, the League of Women Voters, Audubon, Sierra Club, the Minnesota Association of Townships, Isaac Walton League, Clean Water Action, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, the Environmental DFL Caucus, and others in your hearing file. These are also listed, some of them, on the very back page of your hearing file. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going now.
That was two.
You're finished, Jay. What?
You're finished.
No, I have to read.
Oh. You're reading Bruce Anderson's?
Yes, okay. Unfortunately, we have some testifiers who couldn't make it. There are also a conservation officer, other DNR people in the file. Their letters, they're very good. I recommend reading them. This is a DNR person who couldn't make it here because of the weather, unfortunately.
So proceed.
Should I go ahead?
Yes.
So this is for Bruce Anderson. Good afternoon. I'll just read his testimony. Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and committee members. My name is Bruce Anderson. I'm here in support of House File 2791. I'm a retired natural resource manager with 34 years' experience with the U.S. Service and as wildlife manager, wilderness and wild and scenic river program leader and range management specialist, and 4 years with the Minnesota DNR as wildlife manager. During these years, I've been involved with motorized recreation management in Montana, Idaho, and Minnesota. I've had considerable experience in managing both motorized and non-motorized trails. My testimony is on behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the Wildlife Society. Our primary interests revolve around motorized impacts on wildlife populations and or wildlife habitat, and we view this bill as a means to minimize or mitigate these impacts. We want to emphasize that this legislation takes nothing away from the responsible off-road vehicle user. Legal trails now open to users would remain open. This legislation is about protecting the fragile wildlife habitat and waters, promoting easier navigation for users, and improving trail maintenance. Currently, public lands north of Highway 2, every trail without a sign or map is open. That means that illegally created trails and closed trails where signs are removed are open by default. This results in damage to fragile vegetation, impacts to sensitive wildlife populations and their environment, degrades watersheds, and contributes to a loss of solitude. Moreover, it requires considerable DNR staff time and effort to replace damaged signs and restore damaged areas. Review of scientific literature concludes that motorized recreationists can have a disproportional impact on wildlife populations and their habitat. With this legislation, actual and potential impacts to wildlife habitat can be mitigated. In addition, field staff can focus on making a high-quality off-road vehicle system instead of having to chase down illegally made trails, repair the damage, and replace signs. Working in three states, I've witnessed that marking trails open for motorized recreation has proven successful on national forests. Our northern forests are already fragmented with an incredible patchwork of trails. The map in your hearing packet of the designated OHV trails in the Arrowhead illustrates this. Access to designated and posted trails is in place south of Highway 2, and there is no reason why it can't be as successful on state lands. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. John Niebuhr, hydrology professor, University of Minnesota.
Greetings, Chair Hansen and committee members. I'm John Niebuhr, a professor in the Department of Bioproducts and Biosystems Engineering at the University of Minnesota for 38 years. My field of specialization is hydrology, water quality, and water resources engineering. I'm here to testify to the issue of protecting surface waters from impacts of off-highway vehicles on unpaved trails in support of House File 2791. So how does off-road traffic, vehicle trafficking change the hydrology in an area? The primary effect of vehicle traffic is the disruption to the land surface by compaction of the soil. This compaction dramatically decreases infiltration capacity and increases soil erodibility. What are the potential impacts of trails on surface water quality? It is the finer grain materials, such as silt and clay, generated by surface erosion that cause issues to surface water quality. This produces well-known negative effects to spawning beds, and those fine grain materials transport nutrients to surface water, leading to unwanted algae growth. Another impact is increasing water temperature, which is detrimental to cold water fishes. The guidelines for protecting surface water resources from these types of trails have an offset of 150 to 200, even 300 feet. When you examine the history of these guidelines, you find that they were developed over decades of careful experimentation by the U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and state and local environmental agencies. Our overall choice should be to protect the surface water resources from damage through protection of the surrounding land. One might use economics to rule against being so strict in some instances. However, I would argue that one needs to look at the economics of the whole system, the ecosystem services, and not just the special economic interest of a minority. The economics of the ecosystem services will always rule on the side of full protection. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak about House File 2791.
Thank you. Jeff Salmos, MN4WD.
Good
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for having us here to testify for House File 2791. My name is Jeffrey Selmels. I'm part of the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association leadership. We represent 52 clubs comprises of over 1,000 active members. I grew up wheeling with all my friends as a young kid, and the trails were nothing like they are today. They're great. My wife and I, we are avid overlanders, and we traveled about thousands of miles over the years here, experiencing all the things. We also like we enjoy Jeeps and ATVs and the closed parks and trails. We oppose House File 2791. This bill will set back an already complicated and time-consuming process to create trails within Minnesota. This will make it harder for our clubs to build safer, safe, sustainable OHV trails. Limiting the trails to be 200 to 150 feet away from water just seems difficult in the state, considering it includes culverts and bridges. There are thousands of Minnesotans that utilize these trails yearly, and there are businesses that are dependent on being patronized in these towns that are along these trails. It'd be a shame to set back the fast-growing popularity of motorized sports in Minnesota. We respectfully ask that the committee finds this bill unfavorable. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Karen Umfress.
Hello, committee, Chair Hansen, committee members. My name is Karen Umfress. I represent the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association. I'm a dirt bike rider. I ride dirt bikes. I'm only a little bit vertically challenged on my dirt bike. Who does this bill impact? This, as it was already stated, that this bill impacts 70,000 ATV riders in the state. There's also 35% of all the dirt bike riders in the state are from the metro area, and as the 34% of the Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association members are in the metro area. There's hundreds of thousands of motorized vehicle riders in the state. There's also been, in 2023 and 2024, people from every other state in the United States that come to the trails and get a trail pass for Minnesota. This bill does have common sense pieces. That's why all of those common sense pieces are part of the seven-step process that we have to go through already. It's a very intense process. It's more intense for motorized recreation than it is for non-motorized recreation. Other people will talk more about that. The restrictions there are restrictions on water. It doesn't allow for a trail to cross a body of water on a bridge or a culvert, which doesn't make any sense to me. Also, like our dirt bike club has a trail that comes close to the water. We have a barrier that we put up that have benches, and almost every rider, anytime they ride that trail, will get off their dirt bikes and go and sit on the benches for a little rest and to view the water, because it's pretty and we like pretty things as well. Restrictions on motorized recreation are also restrictions on people with mobility disabilities. My father and my mother both had mobility disabilities. My mother has arthritis. My father had diabetic neuropathy, but I could get them out into the woods, into nature, on a UTV, on a Class 2 ATV. So thank you very much for your time and for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. Tom Umfress.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Tom Umfress. I'm also with the Amateur Riders Motorcycle Association of Minnesota. We are celebrating our 55th year of existence this year. We're also known as District 23 of the American Motorcyclists Association, which is celebrating its 100th year of existence this year. I am here to oppose House File 2791. I feel it's a bill looking for a problem that doesn't exist. I feel that all of these topics that have been discussed earlier are already addressed in the current processes. There was some inaccuracy in an earlier testimony about no need for public testimony or no requirements for that. I have a copy here of the seven-step process that we refer to as the eight-step process for grant and aid trail program because it has a step zero, and public comment period is in there. It's also a requirement to get permission from all landowners, road right-of-way authorities, all of that stuff to be able to get a trail in there, so I wanted to correct that. There's a number of pieces of information that we could get you if you want, but this is a DNR document on the grant and aid program. I wanted to say I feel like this is, there was some testimony about this is for protecting the environment. I look at this bill as an anti-off-highway vehicle bill, because if it was looking at protecting the environment, we'd be looking at including all trails in this process. We heard testimony about being near the waters. It's a known fact that OHVs have actual less ground compaction or pounds per square inch than humans walking, especially if you want to put a woman in high heels. But and I also have examples of, like, say, bicycle trail development where they were using bulldozers, Viper packers. I was driving near one of the construction zones for a bicycle trail, and the whole road was shaking from them running the Vibra packer roller there to compact that earth and, you know, break all the water capillaries in the whole area. So I don't look at this as an environmental protection bill. I look at it as an anti-off-highway vehicle bill. I did want to correct some testimony earlier. There are 377,000 ATVs, only 70,000 in the metro area. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ron Potter, ATV Association of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ron Potter. I'm president of ATV Association of Minnesota. ATV Minnesota is opposed to this bill. We feel there's nothing in this bill that's necessary. We're trying to fix something that is not broken. Currently, counties, townships, cities, tribal governments all have control over their land, including in approval or denial of our routes across their land. In earlier bill, you heard the Prospector Trail is working with the Boys Fort Band to build a trail across their land. We're doing that. They're doing that with permission. Earlier testifier indicated the seven-step process that DNR has created involves a very involves a public comment period. Oftentimes, the sponsors that the clubs have to have also require a public process, a public comment period. And if the project moves to an EAW, there is another 30-day public comment period. So many of these projects require at least one, if not three, different public involvement processes. One important factor that I think we need to consider is that ATV trails, especially in the northern part of the state, are built largely on public lands, county, state, DNR, U.S. Forest Service. Over 15 years ago, a lot of those lands were required to be certified to sell their forest products. Part of that certification is a monitoring program that checks to make sure their forest is being managed in a sustainable manner. That also requires the trails on those lands have to be maintained in a sustainable manner. They have audits that are done annually on their forest to ensure that they're complying with that certification. We work closely with those land managers to make sure that the trails we're building are sustainable and in will no way jeopardize their certification and their ability to sell those products. So in conclusion, I would want to reiterate that we oppose this bill. And Mr. Chair, I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Tim Spreck, Minnesota Trappers Association. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tim Spreck. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Minnesota Trappers Association. House File 2791 limits the use of off-road vehicles, snowmobiles, and ATVs on public lands. This is highly restrictive for hunters, fishers, berry pickers, sightseers, and especially for trappers. Trappers must access public lands for fur harvest, but also for predator, scavenger, and nuisance beaver control on behalf of local units of government. This service is critical, and without it, we would have flooding and all kinds of problems. As many of you know, the trapper is the most important and the best solution, and without access, there is a great problem with maintaining water levels and controlling nuisance beaver. For these reasons, the MTA would oppose this bill at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Simonson, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Eric Simonson. I'm representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. We are an association of approximately 20,000 members, focused primarily on hunter education and conservation. We do stand opposed to House File 2791 as amended. We have several concerns with the bill, many of which have been stated here today, so I don't want to repeat things that have already been said. I will tell you that for deer hunters, ATVs have become very commonly used. It has been a useful tool in order to get folks out into the woods that perhaps wouldn't have the ability to do that on their own. It has become a very useful tool for a lot of our youth hunters. It has become a very useful tool for hunters to be able to access deeper into the woods in order to access the game and bring them back out to the road. We would be concerned about the restrictions on access that this provides, and I want to talk just a little bit about north of Highway 2. This is an area of Minnesota that is very interlaced with trails that are used often by our members and other hunters as well. While we understand, I think the intent behind this bill is very good and we appreciate that, we think that the overreaching restricted access that this bill would allow would be very detrimental to our members. It would be very confusing. It's hard to even understand how it might be managed or enforced. And I think our culture in deer hunting and our way of life up north would be greatly affected. We would be happy to sit down with the author or anybody else that wanted to talk about a solution that might work, but we feel like this is perhaps going a little bit too far, and we would appreciate the committee not taking this bill up going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Corey Case, Itasca County Land Commissioner. Welcome again.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you for being patient with me, too. And thank you much for letting me be here today. As I was speaking, the county board opposed 2791 and 23, and I'll be speaking from the Itasca County experience. As land commissioner, we're dedicated at Itasca County to provide non-motorized and motorized opportunities in our county. The public interest in outdoor recreation has skyrocketed, especially after the pandemic, and we've seen a great increase in family use of our trail systems. The benefits of Grand Canyon trails are sustainability, which are environmental, financial, and long-term maintenance, sustainability, as well as oversight and accountability. We also have a county policy that requires public notification and consultation, landowner positions, permissions, as well as the grant need, current grant need procedures of environmental permitting. Our trail development can take up to 5 years. Much of this bill sets back decades of work in LGUs and states successfully establishing the current effective statewide system for sustainable OHV trails in Minnesota. The water setbacks would essentially end development of any trails in our county. Our county has 1,000 lakes, and we generally want to go from point A to B, and it's nearly impossible not to have to go near wetlands or some sort of water body. And all of the Wetland Conservation Act and all the regulations associated with that, as well as stormwater permitting, currently apply to protect waters, and we take that very seriously. Proper planning, construction, maintenance, build sustainable trails, not blanket restrictions which can't take into account all the situations on the ground. Our experience is that the key is local involvement and consensus building of our local governments. We have a dedicated position to that, and we try to work together to find these solutions. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bob Meyer, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to address this important bill, and thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing it forward. Just first of all, I'd like to just clarify the record. There's approximately 350,000 registered ATVs in Minnesota, if you add on off-highway motorcycles and off-road registered vehicles, it's closer to 400,000, 375,000 to 400 people that are abiding by the rules, managing this system, paying for this system, and following the system. I do want to thank the author for the amendment. It does remove some of the concerns we have, and especially the clarifications on lines 2.10 to 2.12 that says an unpaved trail does not include a trail, road, or route where motor vehicles are permitted. Some of the material that you have been handed out show pictures of forest roads, minimum maintenance roads that people are calling ATV roads or trails as well, that are legal to travel on. And this would continue that legal ability. But I think it's important to realize that ATV trails contain forest roads, they contain minimum maintenance roads, they contain access roads that may go to somebody's cabin, favorite fishing hole, or a place where they may have celebrated something important in life or remembering somebody at those spots. So we appreciate that. And I'd like to bring to light one other section of the bill in section 2 that requires local approval and mediation. This language says no portion of a state or grant aid high off-highway vehicle trail or route may be constructed, reconstructed, or improved without the prior approval of the plan by the governing body of the city, county, or township where the trail or route is located. These routes travel through many different townships, many different counties, many different locations across many different ownerships of land. So this could be a deal breaker if one section wouldn't be approved by a local township, but I'd like to ask you to think about this. Would we have a Boundary Waters canoe area if the local community had to approve that back in the day? Would we have a Voyageurs National Park if that local community was asked to approve that back in the day? What would we or wouldn't we have if we turned all this over to local units of government? With that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the work that's been done on the bill. We do have other concerns, and we will work with the author and stakeholders on that. Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else in the audience? Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and representatives. I'm Karen Graham, a homeowner in Eagles Nest Township, one of about 350 homeowners. I speak for HF 2791, which provides for local motorized vehicle recreation while recognizing the interests of people living near or on the trails. Eagles Nest is an example of the need for this legislation. A local ATV organization came in with what was called a proposed trail running through the township. What we discovered was that this proposed trail was already promoted with printed and online maps as a main route to take. The Township Board of Supervisors voted no to the trail, not just once, but twice, which shows the level of concern by the locals. The ATV organization then bypassed the township and went to the county, instead of engaging with locals to find a route that fit everyone's interests. We, Eagles Nest, are not alone. Other cities, townships, and tribal governments have had similar difficulties. This bill brings local governments and local OHV organizations together as equal partners in trail planning to avoid conflicts and elevate community input needed for successful trail design. This bill does not create a local veto. In contrast, bike trails in Minnesota are planned with public engagement. The MnDOT Bicycle Design Manual emphasizes the need for early involvement and collaboration with local governments to create good design. A trail aligned with local values and priorities. Biking is a recreational opportunity akin to OHV recreation. Designing a bike trail is an example of recognizing communities and local governments as part of the solution for success. Thank you for your interest in an issue that affects constituents in your local communities.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you. I would just like to make a clarification, and there was a testifier who misspoke. This bill does not apply to snowmobiles.
Thank you. Members, to the bill. Representative Scraba. Then Representative Vicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, I represent both sides of this issue. I have people who really want to develop trails. I have people that don't want trails. The system we have in place now is pretty strong. I think it is. I was a trail administrator for the DNR Grant and Aid Trail. I've developed trails. I've built trails. I've moved trails for whatever reasons. I've been involved in it. And the seven-step process they talk about, it's like 15. It's eight. Yeah, I'm saying it's a lot more. Trust me. There's a lot of stuff that goes into doing a trail. And the DNR does a good job of overwatching. One of the things that you bring up in your bill that I think we can all work together on. There's more than one. I'm not going to specifically say, but I think there's room for some of those issues to come out where we can work together and help the DNR put it into their rule-making process. But other than that, it's pretty strong for me right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Purcell.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. I mean, your district is very near and dear to my heart. That's where I recreate and learned my outdoor ethic, absolutely. I think I just want to reiterate, I think the point that you were just making is like, when this gets painted as like an us versus them, I just think that's a false dichotomy. And I think I am carrying this bill because I want as many people to get outside and recreate in Minnesota as possible. And we all do that in varying different ways. And so to try and make sure that everyone is able to do that in the way that they want to. And, you know, this is a newer sport versus cross country skiing has been around since, I don't know, as long as Nordic people have existed probably. So trying to just sort of like wrap our heads around the best way to do this for all of Minnesotans. And I love the story about the motorbiker stopping and enjoying the outdoors. Like, that's what we're doing. And if we want to be intentional about it so we don't just tear everything up, and then what's the point anyway? So I think we all have the same end goal in mind, and it's like, how do we best get there?
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Sorry. Thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Purcell, for your bill. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions to make sure that I kind of understood where we are based on everything that we've heard. I think I heard at the beginning that this doesn't affect anything to do with trails that already exist. Is that accurate?
Representative Purcell.
I guess I'm not totally sure about that. I'm sure I can phone a friend and have one of the advocates come with me. Susan is back.
Ms. Schubert.
I didn't hear the question.
Is it applied to existing trails? Trails in existence.
All legal trails remain open. Existing trails remain open. All legal designated map trails remain open, yes. They're not affected by the bill.
Not affected by the bill. Thank you, Chair Hansen, and for clarifying that. I also heard that there are about 400,000 such vehicles in the state of Minnesota. I also heard that this sport is rapidly becoming more popular, right? So I assume that trajectory of 400,000 is, on the upswing. I mean, just to confirm, can somebody confirm that?
Representative Purcell.
Yes, Representative Finke, I believe the since 2005, it's like 175% growth in users or maybe ownership of these types of vehicles in Minnesota.
Okay.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for confirming that, because I just want to make sure we have the stakes appropriately laid for the conversation that we have, which is that there's a lot of existing trail access. There are people who are riding ATVs, and those numbers are increasing very quickly. We have a bill that would not impact any of those existing trails. And we have a new standard that we think might be necessary to create because the popularity of the sport is not slowing. That I just can't believe how reasonable that sounds to me. When something is going from less popular to more popular, you might have to change some of the rules around developing new trails because they are going to be used by more people. I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? I just can't believe how reasonable that sounds to me. I know that everyone doesn't love that, but like that's what we do. As things get more popular, we look at them and see what the impacts of having more vehicles would do, and then we adjust accordingly. So I thank you for this. What seems to me, just a person who rides a bike in a city, seems very reasonable to me. So thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Thank you, Representative Finke. I think the other thing that was really startling to me is that also in that time period, the average weight of the vehicle increased, I'm not a math major, but from 400 pounds to 2,000 pounds. And again, just like looking at how that might impact the trails is, again, one of those things like, oh, okay, 20 years later, let's take a step back and let's look at the broader picture.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. So my family really enjoys this sport, and seeing young kids especially get off of their handheld devices and get out into nature, it's very hard to find things that compete with this. So the amount, and what goes hand in hand with the sport is camping, outdoor activities, and kids learning to work on these machines. It's just endearing to see it. So our, and we've got four of these, two of them DNR in my district, three of them, I guess. No, well, probably all four of them are DNR in my district. But so wonderful to have those. And so my concern would be, while other neighboring states, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and, you know, we go to Wyoming, anywhere we can to enjoy nature, while other states are embracing this, cultivating the sport, and we're putting onerous restrictions on suppressing the expansion of the sport, do you have any concerns with us being less competitive with neighboring states and sending business elsewhere?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jacob. I imagine the reason why you go to these other states is because they're beautiful, they're interesting, they're scenic, they're unique. And if we lose that in our biodiversity and in our ecological systems, then yeah, we won't be able to compete. And so I think that there is a balance between being able to protect the pristine nature that your family enjoys, that my family enjoys, that is part of the culture of Minnesota, and encouraging this sport. I'm glad you mentioned camping because it's about like maybe 5-7% of Minnesotans who own an OHV, and it's 30% of Minnesotans who go to state parks. So it's not just protecting this particular group of people who have a particular interest, which is great and I support as an outdoor enthusiast, but it's everyone else's experience too. And if all of our streams look like our part of southern Minnesota with impaired waters, then we're not going to go up to Scrabba's district or Lisligard's district to recreate. We're going to go to Montana and other places where the water's pristine and where we have fish. Great ecosystems.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you. I don't want to argue with you, but I think the welcoming nature of some of these other states not having multiple bans and restrictions is inviting and could possibly even be causing people to move out of the state entirely. So, and I've had constituents tell me that. So different perspectives from different people.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank all the testifiers today. I think, quite honestly, if the weather hadn't been what it is, I'm guessing it would have been standing room only in this room today. Just based on member conversation around this issue, it does appear that most of us, Representative Purcell, agree that this is a growing sport in the state of Minnesota. But I think where there appears to be an issue is when those folks that are tasked with building these systems, maintaining these systems, come to this committee today and say there's some really challenging problems with this bill and with the language that's being proposed. I'm hoping that we're all paying attention here, because it's those folks who I think really we need to be paying attention to. They live in these places, these communities, these regions all over the state where there happens to be a resource that, like I said, we all agree is growing, the need and use of trails, but they're saying that the bill is an obstacle to that. That's what I'm hearing today. I'm interested in hearing more from them in the weeks to come, and I hope that you, Representative Purcell, are also interested in hearing from them, because if this bill is an obstacle, I would hope that it doesn't go any further. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Heintzman, you know, we all represent 43,500 people. Adds up to about 5.4 million people. And we're supposed to represent everybody. So it's important to hear from users, and I appreciate everyone here. But we also have people who can't come here or don't come here or may not have a voice here. And each of us has to weigh that. I think this has been a good hearing. This is the first hearing we've had on this subject for many years. And that conversation will continue. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lead Heintzman. You took a little bit of the wind out of my sails. I wanted to thank everyone for being here. And I think there are lots of people in the room who are constituents who are also really in support of this. And I agree. I think there would be a lot more people here and on all sides of the aisle. There is a letter just in your closing comments, Representative Heintzman. There are, I think, three letters from former DNR managers who I would argue their job was maintaining the trails, and they are saying north of Highway 3 where there's no signage, it makes their job, sorry, north of Highway 2 is incredibly difficult to manage the trails. So I do think we should listen to that and have that be the case for the entirety of the state. I'd like to thank the Public Lands Coalition. I'd like to thank all the ATV groups who came here. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for having this hearing, and thank you for this scintillating, as ever, conversation.
Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 2791, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Bill is laid over. House File 2796, Representative Brand, Riverwatch Program funding provided. Representative Brand, would you like to move that House File 2796 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's my motion.
And I believe you have an A1 author's amendment?
I do have an A1 author's amendment, yes. And so the A1 author's amendment amends the amount of money that we're asking for from $100,000 to $150,000. And then also there is a reporting requirement that's going to be added to the bill as well. So that way we can give the legislature a full report for how the money was used and to help make the case for why it's important to fund this well into the future.
Representative Brand moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Brand, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for hearing House File 2796. In order to entice the next generation of scientists and land stewards in Minnesota, you really need to give students the opportunities to educate and explore and learn. And I remember, you know, not too long ago, I was a high schooler. I remember taking a high school biology class where we went on a field trip, and that field trip was over to a swamp with a creek running out of it. And we took water samples, and we did some seining, and we looked at the different aquatic life that was available in that time, in that location. And it was really quite an experience, I thought. The Minnesota River Watch, a program of the Friends of the Minnesota Valley, works with high school science classes to collect water quality data across the Minnesota River Basin. The data is submitted to the MPCA, allowing them to monitor the health of less studied waterways in our state. The River Watch has four goals: knowledge, so to develop and understand the factors affecting water quality in general, practice, collect water quality samples at field testing sites to assist MPCA in monitoring and the health of understudied waterways in the basin, to investigate, which is to reflect on the data that can tell us an overall health and quality of the waterway, identifying issues facing the water as well as solutions to reduce pollutants, and finally, stewardship, also community. Foster a sense of responsibility towards improving the health of the local water resources we all rely on for our well-being and survival. And so I have a testifier here with me, well-qualified to talk about this piece of legislation, and then after this, I will turn it over for questions. I will point out that there is one letter contained in the packet from Linda Loomis from the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, which is just north of where I live.
Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ted Suss. I'm the executive director of an organization called Friends of the Minnesota Valley. I hold that position as an unpaid volunteer. 7 years ago, I apologize, we started this Riverwatch program modeled on a very successful program in the Red River. We initially started it with 5 schools using organizational funds. We received an LCCMR grant that allowed us to continue it, and we were funded in the last biennium with a legislative appropriation. Through an oversight on my part last year, we did not make the committee deadline for a hearing on a bill for funding for this biennium. And what I'm asking you to do to pass 2796 is to provide funding at the level of $150,000. The Red River program, which has been around for a lot longer, was funded for this biennium at $165,000 for each year. We serve 25 schools. Because we were not funded this year, we are running the program out of our own cash reserves. We will be broke by the end of the school year and we'll have to end the program. We serve approximately 700 students in direct instruction and indirect instruction probably 3 or 4 times that amount. The program typically involves one of our 2 staff people going into a school, speaking to a class using a lesson that was developed in accordance with the state science standards. And then 4 times during the year, that class will go out to a river or a stream in the district and using a handheld, apologize for that, Representative Jacob, it is a handheld device with about 5 times the size of a cell phone. We throw a probe in the water and we are able to read 7 different components, temperature, pH, conductivity, phosphorus, dissolved oxygen. We also pull a sample and test for turbidity. All of our high school teams, part of the plan is that they go into a middle school or an elementary school and present a lesson that the high school class develops. And that's why we sometimes have 4 or 5 students for every one. I thank you for the hearing. I thank Representative Brand for introducing the bill, and I would appreciate your support. Answer any questions.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill, House File 2796? Anyone else? Any questions for members? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Brand, and thank you, Mr. Suss, for coming. I'm a huge fan of this program. This is the sort of exposure to the outdoors and having young people especially interact with their water that is really formative. Certainly sounds like it was for Representative Brand as it was for myself. So proud to be a co-author of this bill. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brand.
Well, I just want to thank you for the opportunity today to hear the bill, and I would renew my motion that we lay over House File 2796 for possible inclusion.
Representative Brand renews his motion that House File 2796 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 5084, Representative Dotson.
Mr. Chair, just 1 second.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we also have a summer program that's part of Riverwatch, which is held in Southwest Bloomington. And I'd like to invite the committee to visit us someday this summer when we have dozens of young people on site doing hands-on science.
Let us know. Representative Dodseth, House File 5084. General C.C. Andrews State Nursery Reopening Report Required. Representative Heinzman, would you like to move that House File 5084 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Dodseth, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As you see in the in front of you, I've got bill number 584, which is actually relating to natural resources requiring reporting to reopen General Anders Nursery, which was actually a state nursery, which was closed a number of years back. I'll just ask my testifier for time sake to have them come up next and just share some back history on the facility.
Doug Chilma, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen, members of the committee. I'm Doug Tilma. I'm a section manager with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Forestry Division. First of all, just thank you for your interest in our forests and in particular the production of container plug seedlings at the former General Andrews Nursery. It's located at Willow River, Minnesota, and prior to when it closed in 2014, General Andrews' site was one of two state forest nurseries producing bare root tree seedlings. Our remaining nursery is in Akeley, Minnesota. It's now the only state forest nursery in Minnesota and the only large-scale supplier of conservation-grade seedlings to the public. When it was operating, General Andrews Nursery specialized in producing hardwood seedlings due to its more central location in the state. At its peak, it produced about 10 million seedlings per year. And when it closed, the tractors, irrigation pipe, other things, implements were all moved over to the Akeley Nursery. Most of the fields at General Andrews are now fallow. A few of them are being used as seed orchards to provide more seed to our remaining nursery. And some of the fields are being used by other DNR programs to store federal access equipment for a rural fire program, for example. As of now, all the state hardwood and conifer seedling production is now grown at the Akeley Nursery. And to clarify, I'm talking about conservation grade seedlings. These are mass produced seedlings. They're 5 to 8 inches tall. They're used to replant our forest after timber harvest, wildfire, wind events, or to reforest open lands. The ones we currently grow are called bare root seedlings, and they're lifted from the fields in the spring after the ground thaws and packed and shipped with bare roots for quick planting before they break dormancy. They're sold in minimum lots of 500 seedlings, and they're intended for large-scale planting. Our current production is about 4 million seedlings per year. And the reason I explain this is that it's this bill is asking for a report on the cost to reopen General Andrews to produce container seedlings. It's a different type of seedling. They're also called plug seedlings, and they're grown in containers with a plug of soil attached to the roots. There's currently no supplier of plug seedlings in Minnesota. Counties, the state, nonprofits are all purchasing their plug seedlings from a single supplier. It's a Canadian company that grows them in Michigan. We support the interest in creating a Minnesota-grown supplier of plug seedlings. We also support assessing the costs and benefits that's associated with building a plug seeding facility at General Andrews or anywhere else, that would help us understand the best location. And I thank you for your opportunity to testify, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you. This is a fairly recent bill introduction. Mr. Hagemeyer, do we have a fiscal note yet on this?
Mr. Chair, we do not have a fiscal note on this bill.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone else? Members, any questions? I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Representative Dodson.
Thank you, fellow chair. I just ask that you consider this bill and lay it over for inclusion.
Representative Heintzman.
I would renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Renews his motion, House File 5084 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Members, we do not have committee tomorrow. Enjoy the break. We are adjourned. Happy Easter.